Hello, this is David B. Wright, National Director of 40 Days for Life, and I am blessed to serve today as the moderator of this Ending Abortion webcast mega event, an event that literally was conceived just a few short weeks ago. It was first publicly announced just a few days ago, and today we have over 10,000 people participating in this event. If you can picture that in your mind, picture a big basketball arena packed full of people all learning about every aspect of the pro-life movement and specifically how they can save lives where they live and help bring an end to abortion. That's what you're a part of here today. As I mentioned, my name is David B. Wright, and I'm calling in today from just outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. And I'm blessed to have on this panel with me a co-host, which is Kristen Hawkins. She is the Executive Director of Students for Life of America. Kristen, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks, David.
You've been with me since the very beginning of this day. We started at 10 o'clock Eastern. Here it is, 5 p.m. Eastern. We've got two more sessions to go. The momentum has just been building all throughout. We've heard from a lot of amazing speakers. What has been most encouraging to you about how this event has been playing out today?
Well, it's so great because every panel I've been listening to, these are evergreen comments that are coming out that anyone who's new in the pro-life movement or who's been in the pro-life movement for years can take the advice, the resources that are being offered and apply it to their communities so they can take action to end abortion. I think that's what's so amazing about this conference and so unique. Just by attending a few of these sessions, you're going to get the tools you need to end abortion in your town.
And you know, as I've been going through all of this today and having been a part of each of the sessions, it's been so amazing to me. And I keep thinking, oh, I wish more people were aware of this. I wish every pro-life American could be a part of this. And I thought, the beauty is this is all being recorded. And so this panel, when we hear from great speakers like Marjorie Dannenfelser and Charmaine Yost and Tom McCluskey, we can share that with our friends and family members and other pro-lifers. And truly, this can have a lot of life long after this event is over, because these truths of what we can do to save lives where we live will still be profound, still be impactful for many months and years to come. Kristen, let's go ahead and start this session the way we've started every session and the most important way I believe we can start everything we do in pro-life work, and that is with a word of opening prayer. And do you mind leading us in just a brief opening prayer to get us started?
Sure, no problem. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time that we can gather today as your people and learn how we can end abortion in our lifetime. We know as pro-lifers and as Christians that we must rid our nation of this evil, and we must stand up and protect mothers, families, and most importantly, their preborn children. And we know the time is now. Never before has this nation been so ready to end abortion, and we have the resources to do that right now. Although ending abortion sometimes seems like, you know, an impossible task, we know through you all things are possible. And we know we must unify the efforts of all pro-lifers to fight as one to see victory. Lord, thank you for all the organizations that have been participating throughout today, throughout this mega event, and for the organizations and leaders who are represented on this session. We have much work to do, and I'm fully confident that through you, we will be finally able to end abortion in America. And thank you for all the thousands who are joining us today, who are ready and willing to take the lead and abortion in their communities. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Kristen. Well, why are we gathered to end abortion? I think, Kristen, your prayer summed it up. It's because the time has come. Too much harm has been done. It's time to end the blood that's being spilled of innocent children, the harm that is being done to women and to men and to families. And frankly, the urgency is more now than it has ever been. 52 million have lost their lives. Millions of women have been wounded. Families are torn apart. And we watch as in Washington, D.C. and many state capitals, as the abortion industry feeling emboldened by their ability to get their friends elected to some of the highest offices in our land, are ramrodding through the abortion agenda, trying to get taxpayers to fund abortions directly, trying to impose their agenda step by step. And as a result of this, more and more people are coming out of the woodwork. I have seen more people getting active in the pro-life movement in this last year than in the previous 7 to 10 years that I had been involved before that combined. People are ready to see this injustice, this atrocity, they're ready to see it end. And that's why on a Saturday, we have more than 30 organizations joining forces for this event. That's why we have 35 nationally respected speakers who are willing to take time out of their days. They're not getting paid a nickel to be on this call, to be on this webcast, and they're coming on to help you. The whole purpose of this event is not to tell you all the great work that all of our organizations are doing. Instead, is to tell you what you can do. Lives are being lost in the cities and the towns where we live, where we worship, where we work. And this event is all about empowering you, equipping you, educating you so that you can save lives where you live and you can be a part of the solution in bringing an end to abortion. We have had some of the most gifted and articulate pro-life leaders who have shared every aspect of the pro-life movement, building the case for life, talking about the crisis of abortion, Planned Parenthood's abortion empire, the power of prayer, pregnancy care centers, saving lives outside abortion facilities. And then the last panel was on hope and healing for post-abortive women and men. Now we dive into legislative and political efforts. All of the recordings of every session will be available on the endingabortion.com website. I would encourage you to avail yourself of all those great resources. As Kristen said, this will be timeless material that will help you and other pro-lifers in your community for a long time to come. And also, I would encourage you, since all of this has been given to you freely, absolutely free of charge, including the recordings, I would just encourage you to whom much is given, much is expected, share this with others. Tell your friends, tell your family members, tell other people, other pro-lifers. They can access all these recordings and be inspired just as you will be during this panel. They can go access all of those recordings at endingabortion.com. The majority of Americans identify as being pro-life. Let's make sure every one of them has the opportunity to hear the same vital information you are hearing today. In just a second, I'm going to ask Kristen to share just a few sentences about why legislative and political efforts are so critical before we hear from our expert presenters. But during this panel, you're going to be hearing from some of the best national legislative and political experts, including Marjorie Dannenfelser from Susan B. Anthony List, Charmaine Yost from Americans United for Life, and Tom McCluskey from the Family Research Council. So, Kristen, why is it that legislative and political efforts are critical in our work to end abortion?
Well, David, we talked earlier today about the spiritual aspect of abortion, spiritual warfare that's going on. We've talked about being on the ground, having on the ground troops, but there's also a third aspect that we haven't talked about yet, and that we're talking about right now, political and legislative efforts. To end abortion in our country, not only do we need to be out on the ground every day helping women and providing alternatives to abortion, we have to make pro-life laws, and we have to elect pro-life politicians and lawmakers, and we've got to get pro-life judges. So this is extremely important. This plays an integral role in ending abortion in our country. And, you know, one piece of legislation in a state can save thousands of lives each year, one single piece of legislation. So I think this is a very important panel for us to start talking about.
Absolutely. And I will say there's no way in 1 hour we could cover the entire gamut of everything related to legislative and political work in the pro-life movement. And so this will be kind of a pro-life 101, a boot camp, if you will, on the basic fundamentals of what you can do to influence the legislative and political process where you live. But I also am hoping that each of the speakers will share with you additional resources, how to find out about the work their organizations are doing so you can get more actively engaged and learn more than what we're able to cover during this short hour time together. The other thing, this was probably the one topic we had the most questions come in about from the 10,000 plus who are participating in this event. There is no way we could address every single question. So what we've tried to do is discern the key frequently asked question themes and make sure that all the questions that are asked of our presenters include addressing those key topics. And who knows, maybe if we need to delve deeper into some of these topics, we can do another more in-depth training at some point in the future. So with that, I'd like to introduce our first presenter. She is an absolute hero of mine. She is gentle and strong and a tremendous leader, and that is Marjorie Dannenfelser. Marjorie serves as the president and chairman of the board of the Susan B. Anthony List. She directs the organization's mission, is their chief strategist, and is their primary spokeswoman. And under her leadership, I've watched this organization grow to over 280,000 members. Since this organization was founded, they also formed a political action committee, so she knows a lot about political efforts. They've helped to elect 75 pro-life candidates to the U.S. House of Representatives, 7 to the U.S. Senate, and 7 to other statewide offices across the country. And I'm willing to bet that this coming November, that number is going to go up significantly, because I saw Marjorie at work side by side in the fight to keep abortion and abortion funding out of healthcare reform. She is a true warrior. She's an amazing woman. Marjorie, how are you today?
I'm so happy to be with you. I was we were talking a little bit before the webcast and saying it's kind of surreal to be standing in your kitchen and be in communion with thousands and thousands of people. But I'm just imagining us all sitting in the place in the biggest family table that you could imagine. And I'm just thrilled to be here. Thank you for that warm introduction.
Oh, you bet. Well, Marjorie, I think it's helpful for our listeners to all get a feel for everybody and to realize that all of us are just as ordinary as they are, and God has called all of us to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Maybe can you give a little bit of background about how you got involved in pro-life work?
Sure. I'm a strong believer that you can save the world from your living room. You don't have to have a big office. You don't have to have a chandelier in beautiful offices. You can do everything from home. And that was what I was convinced, after being changed to the pro-life position, and the movement really embraced me after having worked on Capitol Hill and seeing what was happening in terms of the representation of women and the life issue. I came to the place where I was completely and utterly convinced that unless we take advantage of our birthright given to us in our founding documents, that we can change this country and bring it back to its original roots, preserving life, unless we get involved in electing human beings, and especially women who understand this issue innately, then we will lose eventually, because every single law, as Kristen pointed out, saves tens of thousands of lives. Every national law saves all those lives. And so for me, it is coming to the pro-life movement, having been very pro-choice, been really honestly a leader on the pro-choice issue, coming to the pro-life issue, having worked on Capitol Hill, when I thought about it really very logically, I thought, what, given the principles of efficiency, how do you save the most numbers of lives in the shortest number of time with the resources that we have? And I came to the place where we were looking at a feminist movement that had decided that had taken a stranglehold on politics when it came to abortion. And it became very clear to me that we had to start electing women who countered that view, who said that women, that abortion destroys women as it destroys their children. Mm-hmm. Women who would listen to the early suffragists, who agreed with that position, that pro-life position, that we defended men who were getting that onslaught from women, who were trying to defeat men, our great men who believed in the pro-life position based on women's rights. We had to protect them. So the laws that we pass based on really very, very strong pro-life leadership with women at the helm many times, will be the most efficient way we can save the most lives in the shortest amount of time. The data just proves that. Now, what we have now, as you know, David, we've got every single thing that we need. We have the hearts and minds of this country.
That's right.
Better than we ever have before. The young women, men, we've got it. Now what we need to do is leverage that opinion and make sure that that opinion is reflected in our laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I do what I do, why we built this organization for a long time, and why we put a special emphasis behind women's leadership, people like Sarah Palin, who is a great ally of ours.
Mm-hmm. Now, Marjorie, let's focus. You spent a little bit of time there talking about elections and getting good people elected. Let's take this down to the core fundamentals and break this down to something that anybody anywhere can do. And let's start with the importance of voting. From, you know, when you started Susan B. Anthony List back in 1992 to where the pro-life movement is now, why is it so critically important for pro-life voters to get out on Election Day and also to get everybody else they know out on Election Day to vote?
That is the central question, because as time has gone on, there has been a undermining of hope in our process. But what is now happening is a resurgence of our belief in the documents of our country, that we really do, every single one of us, with our vote and with our obligation to preserve human life, can put our energy, our influence, our money behind candidates that advance our views. And then, in turn, we'll go to the Senate and the House and our state offices and work to pass laws that save human lives. There is a sense of urgency. What I think is often hedging against people getting involved in electoral process is, number one, they don't believe their vote matters. Mm-hmm. Number two, even if they elect some pro-life person, it's just going to take so long. That is simply, all of the evidence is counter to that. Number one, your vote does matter. 40% of our very strong pro-life people are not voting at all because they don't believe it matters. And therefore, we have a culture of death that is reigning supreme in the elite political circles in our country. Because we, as a pro-life nation, which we are, have decided that somehow, and I hate to be a mommy, but I'm a mom of five, I'm just going to say it, we have left off our obligation in these past elections to step up, no matter what, and let our voice be heard. Why would you only leave that voice to the other side? Why? Mm-hmm. The only reason is that you would have become despairing and hopeless about perhaps the power of our position. I don't know. But what I do know is that when we refrain from voting and bringing our friends in to vote for the strongest pro-life candidate that you can find in your district or nationwide, then the culture of death reigns supreme. And we can't even pass a ban on federal funding of abortion in every healthcare system, something that every 80% of the nation opposes. This is the consequence of lack of engagement. 80% of the nation opposes it, and yet that's exactly what everyone on this phone will be doing in the coming years. We will be funding abortions, the most violent contradiction of our conscience since the slave laws, where we had to return slaves to their owners. Mm. We should be outraged, and we should be re-engaged in a way that has never been before, and it's actually happening. It is happening, as you communicated very well, David.
Okay, Marjorie, so it's vital for people to vote. It's vital for them to get their friends, the pro-lifers, out to vote on Election Day. But before they do that, they need to know who to vote for. They need to know about the issues. How can a voter get informed about their local candidates, local issues, state issues, even federal issues? What are some trusted sources they can go to for that information?
You have two very weighty obligations. And they are moral obligations. They are to find out the pro-life candidates in your area. You can go and then to find out the pro-life candidates that are running nationwide that will be the national leaders bringing us into a new pro-life age. The two places that I know that I go to are Susan B. Anthony List website, because we vet every single candidate. I talk to them every single day. I know where their heart is. And we will never endorse somebody who will be a backbencher on this issue. So you go to the Susan B. Anthony List website, and we'll make sure you know who that is. But we are looking for the supreme, like, cream of the crop leaders,
right,
and especially women. National Right to Life also has a great website that tells you where the where a bigger broad brush of candidates stand. And also your local leaders. But don't wait for the information to come to you. And you know what? If you've got any question in your mind, please call the Susan B. Anthony List office. We will make sure you know who your local greatest candidate is. Or go to our website, sba-list.com, and sba-list.com, and just ask. If you've ever been involved in a campaign, you know that a handful of people can change the world, and they do all the time.
Absolutely. And I would even say in the community where I used to live before I moved to the D.C. area in Texas, we didn't have really any kind of resource for local candidates, so we went to national organizations, got guidance, we put together our own nonpartisan voter's guide, and we're able to educate the pro-life people in our community and get good people in office, bad people out, and ultimately that resulted in our state senator passing a budget amendment that defunded Planned Parenthood across the state of Texas. It was absolutely profound, but it really does mean get informed and then sharing that news with other people and then making sure people vote. Marjorie, a last question. How can voters get connected with volunteer and donation opportunities that can really benefit the campaigns of really pro-life candidates? How can they help in that political process?
Again, it's going to the sources that you trust the most. And I would love it if you trust the SBA List, because I think we deserve that trust. We have on our website the folks that we believe are going to usher in a new pro-life nation. So going there and finding out on the national stage is critical. And I'm sorry, David, because I know that local is so critical. It always is. And sure. The best way to do that is to be reading. And there's no substitute for reading the newspaper and your Catholic newspaper and your church bulletins and finding out what is actually happening. You must do that. But at this moment in history, we have got to have national leaders. There are situations where we've got clear contrasts in every single election that we're looking at, and the consequences are enormous for the Supreme Court and our ability to actually legislate on the state level. So it doesn't matter where you're from. You can definitely influence a national election by your volunteerism and your money. The other side does this beautifully. They get the connection and they do a great job. We are catching up, and we can absolutely put this motivation, all this energy into saving human beings in the law. And I can't thank you enough, David. I don't know. I think everybody on this call, and you and I and Kristen, everybody listening, we know that where do you find better people than the people involved in the pro-life movement?
Amen.
Those are the people that we want our candidates to know. Bring them into your world. Bring them into your home. Make it your job to go meet and let them see your heart. Don't think that they don't want to know you, and don't be afraid. Approach them, speak to them, and reveal what you know.
Mm. Well, Marjorie, for those who want to learn more, obviously we can't delve into this topic in tremendous depth during a
right.
one-hour session, but for people who want to learn more about the importance of legislative and political efforts, you mentioned the Susan B. Anthony List website. Will you mention that again? And then any additional resources you would point people towards to take this to the next level?
Yeah, well, the SBA-list.org website is my passion and our mission. The other thing I would say would be always be contacting your state party, whatever party you're in, always finding out, I want to know who the pro-life candidates running in your party are this year. Mm-hmm. Ask that one question of your state party. We can't give all those numbers out today, but you can figure out where your state party is and call them, ask them that question. In a large scale, it makes a difference. In a concrete level, and then you know where to go.
Mm. Well, Marjorie, thank you so much. As you alluded to, you said you hope that you've earned the trust, and Susan B. Anthony List, along with the other groups represented on this panel, I believe are the utmost of integrity and have done a phenomenal job of bringing the pro-life issue to the forefront in the legislative and political process, and I credit a lot of that to you and your leadership, and I just thank you and appreciate you, and I just value your friendship more than you possibly know.
Can't be done without grace and prayer. That's your gift. So thank you so much, David.
You bet. Thanks, Marjorie Dannenfelser. And let's move on to our next presenter, who actually is calling in from the Atlanta airport. And those of us in the pro-life movement who travel a lot, inevitably you're going to spend a lot of time going through Atlanta and Chicago and some of the other hub airports. She actually was willing to dial in the midst of travels today, and that's Dr. Charmaine Yost. Charmaine Yost is the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. They were the first national pro-life organization in the nation, and they have legal strategists that have been involved in every pro-life case that's been before the United States Supreme Court since the Roe versus Wade decision back in January of 1973. AUL's leadership in pro-life law and legislation has been continually recognized, and recently we've seen Dr. Yost testify not once but twice during different Supreme Court confirmation hearings, first for Sonia Sotomayor, and then most recently, just in recent days, for the Elena Kagan confirmation hearings. And I regularly see Dr. Yost in the national media, and she provides congressional testimony, on and on and on. It's just an incredible background. And Charmaine, thank you so much for dialing in from the Atlanta airport. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, David. You know, it's whenever you ask me to do something, I want to be a part of it, because it's always visionary and exciting, and it's, you know, Marjorie made a great point about it's good to be a part of the pro-life movement, and so thanks for having me.
Well, and Charmaine, you may or may not know this, but the original idea when this was discussed about putting this event on just a couple of weeks ago was in your office there in Washington, just a few blocks from the White House, and look what it's birthed. Here we have 10,000 people gathered together, and we're getting to share the good news of the pro-life movement and encourage one another and press on in this work until we end abortion. How about, let's hear from you a little bit about how you got involved in this pro-life work. Give us a little bit of background.
Well, you know, it was funny, as I was listening to Marjorie talk about the importance of one person, I was thinking about the answer to that question. And I hope this would be encouraging to everybody as they listen, that I got started as a teenager. My dad was a precinct captain in Kentucky for a congressional candidate, and my brother and I went out and went door-to-door leafleting. And I remember it was raining and cold, and but we still had a really good time. We took a few friends with us, and the end result was that that congressman won not just his seat in Congress for the first time, but he also won in our precinct by a larger margin than anywhere else. And as young people, we were just caught up in this vision of looking at each other and thinking, wow, we made a difference, you know, by helping my dad get a really high turnout in our area. And frankly, that congressman is still a pro-life stalwart in Congress today. And that's kind of a fun thing to look back on. And I kind of got sucked into politics more and more as time went by. But that's how it all got started. So for everybody on the phone call, go send your kids out the leaflet this fall.
There you go. That might be the start of the next pro-life national leader. You never know. Well, Charmaine,
you never know.
We're talking about how the average person in a community can have an impact on legislative and political efforts. What would be, just as a foundational starting point, what would you say to any person who wants to influence the legislative and political process in the state where they live? Where would they begin?
Well, you know what? I'm thinking that, you know, we focus so much on, in terms of when we put out calls to action, of asking people to make phone calls and to send emails and letters and things. And I'd like for all of us today to kind of back up and look at the 30,000 foot level and think about the fact that all of life is about relationships. You want to know people. You want to think about your networks of contacts and friends within your church, within your school, within your community, and being able to mobilize people at that level. But you also want to think about having a relationship with the people who represent you, because that is the dynamism of the American system, is the fact that the people that you vote for report to you. They work for you. And so you want to develop that relationship. It really kind of struck me when we were all up on the Hill talking about the health care bill and working to meet with various representatives whose votes were critical. You know, those of us who live and work in D.C., we kind of get used to the process. But one of the things that I just found really refreshing and exciting was to see that, you know, we would regularly get trumped by people who were in their running shoes and tourist clothes, and they're there to see their local congressman. And from the congressman's perspective, they're way more important than those of us who are there living and working every day, because those are the people they report to. And so you want to develop a relationship with the person who represents you at the state level, in the House and the Senate. You want to develop a relationship with your congressman, with your senator. Make sure that you're touching base with them. They should know who you are. And that becomes very helpful if you have a relationship with them when you want to be heard on an issue, that you can write them a note or even maybe pick up the phone and call them. Mm-hmm. And if you're involved in their campaigns, they're going to be responsive to you.
That's absolutely right. Well, you mentioned the importance of developing that relationship, and then when a big issue comes up, they'll be much more receptive to the letter or the phone call. When somebody's reaching out on a critical issue, whether it's something at the federal level, something at the state level, what is the most effective way they can communicate with their elected officials, and, you know, what would you say to them to advise them and how to make that most impactful?
Anything, you think about your own life, what's most effective? It's like when if I get a handwritten note from somebody, wow, do I ever pay attention, because I never get that anymore, right? So the same thing holds true with, your representatives. Anything that goes back to a relationship with them. Now, granted, we're always going to have times when we want to do the mass emails, the mass phone calls, and I don't want to underestimate how important those are. You know, we all have different tools that we use at different times, but I would encourage people to occasionally, when you really, really care about something, to sit there and write a note or pick up the phone and call, do something personal to let them know that you really care.
And it really does make a difference. I've heard numerous times that sometimes on a major issue, some state representatives or state senators may only hear two or three calls. And if they get five or six calls, all of a sudden they think, wow, this is a critical issue. It doesn't take that many people. It just takes people who are willing to do it. And I think that is very, very good advice. Charmaine, one of the things your organization has been so effective at over the years is helping to craft model legislation that then states can adopt or that can be modified to apply to different states. And for a lot of people, you know, it seems like this big foreign process of getting good laws passed or defeating bad laws, and this whole legislative thing is almost an enigma to many people. How can a person help? What can they do from their vantage point? The average person, just like me, what can I do to help get good legislation passed in my city, in my state, federal legislation, and what things can I do to help defeat bad legislation?
Well, you do want to be informed, and you make a really important point, is that I think sometimes people are overly intimidated by the process. You know, groups like Susan B. Anthony List and Americans United for Life and others, you know, we exist to try to break things down and make them more easy for people to understand. We have a whole team of attorneys who've invested their life in being experts on the political process. And I am continually saying to them, you know, make this easy for me. If I'm not an expert in this issue, you know, make it so that my teenager can just kind of pick up this fact sheet and understand it. And I think people will find that, that if they develop a relationship with groups that they trust, that's what they're looking for, is really quick and easy information, because you don't want to have to become an expert in something to weigh in on it.
Right.
But you want to find a group that you trust and then understand the issues. And frankly, you know, one of the things I like to tell people is that, the other side really works to make things more complicated than they actually are. That's, I think, one of the biggest things that I see as a tool that they use against us is, you know, people will be debating the life issue with me and they'll go, well, you know, it's really complicated. I frequently will come back and say, well, you know, it's really not that complicated. There's life and death, and choose you this day which side you want to be on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that complicated. And hopefully, we're working hard to get information out there that breaks it down for you on any particular issue of the day.
Mm-hmm. Now, Charmaine, a last question before I ask where we can get additional information and resources that you would recommend. But a last question, you know, we have throughout this day today on this Ending Abortion webcast event, we've covered a lot of different facets of the pro-life movement, the educational components, the different things that people can do. And many times we, whatever way God brings us into the pro-life movement, we're in a little, almost like a little silo, isolated sometimes from the rest of the pro-life work. And yet right now the stakes are so high on the legislative and political front that regardless of whether somebody is out praying at a 40 Days for Life and engaged in vigils in their community, whether they are working at a pregnancy care center, whether they're helping to bring healing to those who've been wounded by abortion, what is at stake right now for life, and why is it critically important that everybody engage on the legislative and political fronts?
Well, I think it's really important, given the assault coming from this administration on the culture of life, that everybody remains focused on the long term and understanding that, remaining optimistic and keeping the end in sight, and knowing that if we're faithful and to this high calling of being a part of the culture of life, of standing on the ramparts and being a witness for this, it's just a great and glorious call to be a part of the pro-life movement. We can be encouraged by that, because we don't know how each individual step is all going to fit together in the end, but we do know that we are making progress, that the American people are increasingly saying that they're pro-life, that we live in the post-sonogram generation. You know, it's so interesting to me. It's like we are so frequently characterized as the ones who are anti-science, and yet it's exciting and thrilling to me because we're the ones who are on the side of science.
That's right.
Science continues to underscore the humanity of the unborn. Medical science continues to push back the point of viability. So it's exciting to be a pro-lifer, and we need to remain encouraged, because the forces of death cannot long prevail against the truth.
Absolutely. Well, Charmaine, I just want to say thanks so much for the great work that you do. For those who want to learn more about how they can have a positive impact on legislative and political efforts, any suggestions of a resource or resources that they could tap into to delve deeper into this topic?
Oh, thank you for asking, David. I would be very honored for Americans United for Life to be a resource to your listeners. We, our team of attorneys does work very hard to research pro-life laws and to make it accessible and to get the information out there for people. If you go to our website, Americans United for Life, AUL.org, there's a whole host of information. In particular, I would recommend to people, we do come out every year with a resource called Defending Life, which is a state-by-state guide to the status of pro-life laws in your community. Every year we come out and we rank the states according to how pro-life they are. So I'd encourage you to go online. That whole resource is available on our website. You can either order it or just download the chapters that are most interesting to you. You can see how your state stacks up. You can see the model legislation that we recommend to make your state more pro-life, and that's all available at AUL.org.
Well, and that state-by-state guide is right on my bookshelf next to my desk. I refer to it regularly, and everywhere I go, people are always talking about, what's my AUL ranking in my state? I was just in Arkansas a few days ago, and they were all talking about how they ranked on the AUL ranking. So you have provided great resources that can help people as they take their own legislative and political efforts in their community, in their state, and getting involved in national issues to a whole new level. So Charmaine, thank you for taking time out of the middle of your travel and calling in from the Atlanta airport, and I hope you have a blessed rest of the day. Thanks for being a part of the webcast.
Thank you, and thanks for putting this together, Dave. It was great to be with you.
You bet. Well, our final presenter during this panel on legislative and political efforts is another just champion of not only the pro-life cause, but the cause of family, the causes of religious freedom, and that is Tom McCluskey from the Family Research Council. Tom is the Vice President for Government Affairs at FRC. He works with Tony Perkins, the head of Family Research Council. And Tom, I've seen numerous times representing the organization before Congress on numerous issues from education, policy, elder care, tax reform, faith-based initiatives, and the sanctity of marriage, as well as the sanctity of human life. So, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and I apologize that Tony couldn't be on today, except he's actually on a mission trip in Honduras.
Well, you know what? He's on the front lines living out his pro-life commitment, and so here you are. And, Tom, I have gotten to work side-by-side with you and seen you at events in D.C., and I just respect so much the work that you do, and I'm just honored. I know there was a reason you're the one who's supposed to be here today, and I think as the Vice President for Government Affairs, you've got some great information to share with people. Maybe give a little background. We've done that with Marjorie and Charmaine, and tell us, how did you first get engaged in pro-life issues, and how'd you get to where you are today, Tom?
Well, just very quickly, I usually like to joke that I once worked for a fiscal conservative group, I worked for Big Oil, and I wanted to go to non-controversial issues like abortion or gay marriage. The truth, though, I mean, if I really looked at it, this is a story I really haven't told much, is that about 25 years ago this year, my best friend passed away, committed suicide about 2 weeks before high school graduation, and about a month after that, his girlfriend found out she was 2 months pregnant. And for the next few following years, I was more or less like a father figure, or tried to be a father figure to that child and helped raise it. And it just gave me the full understanding. I mean, my faith gave me the first understanding, but it gave me the full understanding that life is not something to be wasted. It's something to be reveled in, no matter what the origins are. And that's one I hope we all can share.
Well, you have had, Tom, throughout your career, extensive experience in legislative and political initiatives. Can you boil it down for those who are maybe new to this part of the movement, or maybe they're just getting started in pro-life work? Can you help them understand what are the fundamental things that any person who's a part of this webcast event or who's listening to the recordings afterwards, what can they do to positively impact the legislative and political process right where they live?
Well, Marjorie and Charmaine touched quite a bit on it, and it is, to borrow a phrase from the liberals back in the 70s, act locally.
Yeah.
Get to know not just your congressman. It's not always, the door isn't always open even when your congressman is back home. If it is, that is fantastic, and you should utilize that. Except even your city councilman can affect things. Your school board can affect things. Planned Parenthood plans on opening a lot of clinics in schools. And you need friends on the school board. And also your state legislators, more than 50%, it's probably even about 75% of the current legislators up in Congress got their start in the state legislature. So if you can be seen as a resource, and if you could be seen as a friend and a sound voice on the life issue to those people, you just never know where those relationships might take off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think, again, building on what Marjorie and Charmaine both said, it all starts local and there are things that everybody can do. Tom, I'd like maybe for you to think of some sort of a current event, something that's happening right now that can be a case study. And even if somebody's listening to the recording of this 6 months or a year from now, but it could be a case study that would be instructive in showing how everybody can make a difference being involved in these efforts.
Well, currently, as we're speaking right now in the summer of 2010, the Department of Defense authorizations, which is not a must-pass bill, but many people see it as a must-pass bill, for it is very vital for our troops, even though they will get funding if it is not passed. And the Democrats have usually tried to attach their little pet items to it. This year, one of the things they attached, Senator Roland Burris, a temporary senator from Chicago, Illinois, attached an amendment that would turn our military bases, both foreign and domestic, basically into abortion facilities, where currently, military members or their family would be able to go to a military hospital. They can't under current law, but if this were to pass, they would be able to treat a military hospital as an abortion facility. And an abortion facility that, say, if it's in Alabama, would not be susceptible to Alabama's laws on life, such as parental involvement laws, or an ultrasound law. So they would become little, seas of sanctuary for pro-abortion folks. And what's happening, though, right now is the Democrats are realizing this close to an election, we live in a, even though we have a pro-abortion Congress, we live in a pro-life country, and they're realizing that if they pass something like this, November will probably look pretty bad for them right now, or even worse than it currently is going to. So the phone calls that they've been getting, and is it different, as Charmaine and Marjorie pointed out, the phone calls, the emails, the letters, and also some of the confrontations as they go back home have been having a very sound effect. And there is a possibility we can beat back these amendments, even though it is the number one priority this summer of 2010 for both Planned Parenthood and NARAL.
Wow. So really, if we do those things we've been talking about during this panel, it can make a difference. And I would certainly say for everybody who's participating in this event live, definitely get involved on this specific issue. But even after the fact, recognize that what we've talked about, communicating with your elected officials, confronting them when they come back home to their districts, really can make a profound difference. Tom, I know one of the things you and I share a great concern about is Planned Parenthood, the abortion giant. We had an entire panel earlier today specifically focusing on Planned Parenthood. But in recent years, particularly as they've been emboldened by the change in leadership in Washington, D.C., this organization that claims to be this so-called healthcare organization has been instead flexing its political muscles and is doing everything it can to impose its radical agenda through its friends in the administration. Let's think, again, going all the way back to local, what are some effective ways that a person in their community can directly counter Planned Parenthood's agenda where they live?
Well, we're opposed to cloning. I would think the number one, if we weren't, is to clone David B. Wright. Because
we don't believe in that.
Right, exactly. But you have found at the very front lines in founding 40 Days for Life, and that's first thing you need to do is prayer and education, where you mobilize churches and college campuses, where people are sometimes looking for a cause, they're looking for something, and also there's a lot of homeschoolers out there. My sister-in-law homeschools 5 great kids in Ohio, and she has a class project where they go and they follow 40 Days for Life, they pray in front of the clinics in Ohio, the abortion facilities in Ohio. Another thing that you can do is to support your local pregnancy resource center. These are places that look at both the mother and the child when they're in difficult situations. And unfortunately, Planned Parenthood and their allies are putting these people under attack. We have a great resource in our pregnancy care center book, which was done in coordination with a number of the great, like Heartbeat International and CareNet, some of the great national networks for pregnancy care centers. Another thing to do is get involved locally. As I mentioned before, pass and enforce legislation on the local level. And that enforce is extremely important because even a state like Georgia, which has just about every pro-life law on the book, these laws are not enforced. So you need to make sure that once they're passed, you can start talking to the attorney general, you start talking to the governor and the lieutenant governor's offices, that they act on these bills, be they parental involvement laws or ultrasound requirements, or a great one and a pet one of my boss is abortion clinic regulations. He helped pass one of the first abortion clinic regulation laws in the country when he was a state legislator in Louisiana. And after he did that, the majority of the clinics in the state closed, abortion facilities in the state closed.
Wow.
Beyond that, and I'll be very quick, is follow the money. Pass and use transparency laws. FRC is part of a transparency coalition that's led by National Taxpayers Union. Many states now make it much easier for you to find out where your money's going. Check city, county, and state budgets. Familiarize yourself with city council members and state legislators to identify champions. And also state FOIA requests on federal reimbursements. A number of times in states like Illinois and California, it's been revealed that Planned Parenthood, we all know that what they do is an evil, except surprise, surprise, what they do is also corrupt.
Right.
And they've built taxpayers out of amount of money. And you gotta take kind of an Elliot Ness approach that I don't care what slays the beast or how many, if it takes 1,000 cuts to slay the beast, I just want to be holding a sword on a couple of those swings.
Amen. Well, and you mentioned, Tom, FOIA requests, and that was something we utilized in Bryan College Station, the Freedom of Information Access request, so we could learn what was going on inside, particularly groups like Planned Parenthood that take in tax funding. You're able to find out an awful lot of information by putting those requests in. For those who want to learn more about how they can affect the legislative and political efforts in the pro-life movement where they live, do you have any suggestions of maybe a good resource they could start with or something that would help them take it to a higher level than what we're able to get into on this overview on this panel?
Well, the beauty of the pro-life movement is its diversity. Charmaine was touching on how Americans United for Life, they've kind of, even though other organizations look into it, they've kind of cornered in drafting legislation for the state level and helping you get it passed. There are a number of state groups that we work very closely with that are affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Right.
You can find those on our website, frcaction.org or frc.org, alongside with a lot of the information I said today and information on current legislation up on Capitol Hill and in the states. And for candidates, Susan B. Anthony List is a great resource, as is FRC Action Pack. And to find out for FOIA requests and also on the different legal aspects, because like laws that they try to keep you just from praying in front of a clinic, which you are very familiar with. A great resource is Alliance Defense Fund. And they are a nonprofit that will help you out for free in cases like that on the life issue and on the marriage issue as well.
Right. And I've worked very closely with Alliance Defense Fund, and Steve Aden and their group of attorneys are just phenomenal. One other resource that I want to mention as well, we had asked them to be a part of this panel, but at the last moment they didn't have anybody who didn't have a schedule conflict to join us, was National Right to Life. And I know Marjorie mentioned them at the beginning, and they have state affiliates, and I've worked with many of their state affiliates, some of which have been very actively engaged in the 40 Days for Life efforts, another great resource for legislative and political information. Tom, thank you so much for your leadership on this vital issue. Thank you for all you do, not only on the pro-life issue, but on the sanctity of marriage and on all of the other issues that Family Research Council delves into. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to be a part of this Ending Abortion webcast event today.
Well, thank you, David. And you were mentioning before how all the other speakers were your heroes. I got to tell you, in the just few years, it seems, even though it's probably been even longer now, you have quickly become my hero in all that you do. And I appreciate everything that you have done.
Well, I guess we have a mutual admiration society going. I appreciate that. And Tom, God bless you. I love you, brother, and keep up the awesome work. Look forward to seeing you soon. And with that, that brings us to the end of our panel on legislative and political efforts. Again, we've just touched on the surface of this critical issue that can make such a profound difference. In a second, Kristen Hawkins will give us a quick summary to recap what we've gone through during this session. But I just want to personally thank our presenters, Marjorie Dannenfelser from Susan B. Anthony List, Charmaine Yost from Americans United for Life, and Tom McCluskey from the Family Research Council. God bless you. I appreciate all of you. And Kristen, why don't you give us a quick recap of what we've accomplished during session 8 out of 10?
Sure. Well, this is an exciting panel. As a political junkie, I just love listening to everyone. Marjorie kicked the panel off right, talking about how pro-lifers, we've got to step up and take a stand. We've got to vote pro-life. We need to find and train pro-life candidates. And then we need to get others to vote for pro-lifers. You know, and she was exactly right when she was saying, we need to be outraged and engaged like never before. We've got to communicate and confront those legislators to effect real change. Charmaine did a great job talking about how just having a little interaction as a teenager in the pro-life movement, the political world, showed her how she can make a difference, how one person can make a difference. And she had some great wisdom when she was talking about developing relationships with your state and national representatives. It's so important to have that personal touch when you're dealing with politicians and your representatives. And Tom, you did a great job wrapping it up, talking about how we need to be involved with the city councils and school boards and how those things matter. Keeping Planned Parenthood out of your schools starts at the school board level, and we can counter Planned Parenthood's agenda in the community by praying, educating, getting homeschoolers involved, supporting the local pregnancy help center, and enforcing and passing legislation and transparency laws. I think this was great information. I think it's a starting point for many people here. I encourage everyone to go to these organizations' websites to figure out how you can take further action for life.
And even though some of this seems very basic and very fundamental, these are the things that really can make a difference. Here you have leaders of three of the most influential national pro-life organizations, or organizations that also delve into pro-life issues as well as other issues, three national leaders, and they're telling you these are the basics that will make the change that will be felt in your local community, across your state, and throughout our nation. It really does make a difference. Kristen, thank you so much for your help on co-hosting this panel. This event has been co-organized by Students for Life of America, which Kristen is the executive director of, and their website, studentsforlife.org, and also 40 Days for Life, and that's an organization I'm blessed to be a part of, and our website is 40daysforlife.com, and that's the number 40daysforlife.com. I also want to thank Ambassador Speakers Bureau, our good friend Gloria Lida, who helped to coordinate many of the speakers for this event today. If you need a pro-life speaker at your next event, go to ambassadorspeakers.com and you can find some of the best of the best speakers. And for those who have been with us for the previous sessions and you're ready to move on to the next panel, where Kristen will be speaking as a presenter, not just as a co-host, that panel will be addressing pro-life youth advocacy. It's going to be dynamic. And even if you're not a youth anymore, I know I probably don't fit that qualification anymore with a few gray hairs. My kids would say more than a few, but that's okay. I would recommend you join that panel. All you have to do to join that, go to endingabortion.com/event, endingabortion.com/event. Scroll down to the panel on pro-life youth advocacy. Open it up and you can participate either live, or if you are listening after the fact, you can listen to the recording of that event. As I mentioned at the top of this panel, all of this is being given to you freely. I hope you have been as encouraged and filled with hope on the impact we can have through our legislative and political efforts, but also throughout this entire movement. We're seeing the whole movement unfold before our eyes during this day today as we go through everything it's going to take to end abortion and to save lives right where you live. Please share this hope and encouragement with everybody you know. Ask your friends, ask anybody who's a pro-lifer, ask people involved in legislative efforts, political efforts, whether they're involved in post-abortion healing, pregnancy centers, saving lives out on the front lines in front of abortion facilities. Tell them to go to endingabortion.com. All of the recordings, this entire event, will be made available free of charge for them to access from here forward. That brings us to the end of the legislative and political efforts panel. For those who are moving on next to pro-life youth advocacy, we will talk to you there. And thanks again, as together we commit, we rededicate ourselves today to ending abortion. We'll talk to you soon.